Yes, we're live on a Monday. Reaction Monday it is. Welcome into the program. It is the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us. As always, live with you on Facebook Live. And you if you happen to pop into the Facebook Live, yeah, this is my normal look. You know, it's weird sometimes, right? We got the Facebook Live for you to watch the show as well as listen to the show. Like, this is the multimedia approach of radio now, so you get to see what I guess I look like or whatever. But if you ever ran into me in town, this is what I look like, man. This is it. You know, no work clothes. I got jeans and a brewery t-shirt covered by a pullover and another brewery hat. Like, that's me, man. That's it. If I could do this every day, here we go. This is what it looks like. So I know it's absolutely flattering, but golly, we have a ton to get to. And the reason I'm in this is day off today. We couldn't take a day off from this program. No, not at all. Wouldn't make any sense based on what happened over the weekend for sure. It was a busy local sports weekend, but certainly a lot of reaction to what occurred on Saturday and what occurred yesterday in football. Halfway through the show today, we're going to have another game, that Bills and Steelers game coming up. I got a question for you coming up in the second segment of the program as to how crazy of a fan would you be with minus 15 or minus 20 degree wind chill in Kansas City, or the one that they have going on here in about 25 minutes or so, and that is snow-covered seats in Buffalo, New York. Like, how crazy of a fan would you be if you had to put yourself in those situations? So anyway, we'll dive into those topics as well. Ball State men's and women's basketball action over the weekend. They'll continue Mid-American Conference play this week. A lot of talk about men's basketball. We'll get to that, but a big-time win by Ball State women's basketball. It seems like a broken record as we talk about it each and every week, but that Bowling Green win was an awesome display by Ball State women's basketball. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I want to start here. Delaware County Tournament this past weekend. And I don't know if I do this enough on this program, but we have so many people behind the scenes that put together, you know, high school sports are a big part of what this station is all about and has been all about, well, since I've been here and even before I was here in 2014. And I tell you what, one of my favorite weeks of the year and our staff's favorite weeks of the year is the Delaware County Tournament. And we've been proud over the last now three seasons in completion after this weekend to broadcast each and every game of the tournament, from quarterfinals to the girls on Tuesday, all the way through the championship games on Saturday, on both radio and video. And I want to give a shout out to our staff, because not only did they produce excellent quality, but we had so many people helping this year, more so than everything else, from three play-by-play announcers, myself, Jared Boomer, and Rick Johnston, and then behind the scenes, and of course Rob Fisher, our analyst. Can't obviously forget Rob. He is so committed to what we do. But our video producers and our technical producers and all the different things that make the video component about it. Our staff enjoys this week so much, but it takes a lot of hard work. It takes flipping stations. It takes, building graphics. All the back end stuff that we don't talk about, or maybe you as the viewer or the listener don't exactly pay attention to, and you shouldn't, because the fact of the matter is you're there to view the action, see what's going on, and at the very least, if we can do that for you, we do. But there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes, so I just want to give a big shout out to our staff. Rick Johnston handled Friday and Saturday, did a phenomenal job. Jared Boomer earlier in the week, and I had a couple games early on. But this is the strength of our staff, that we have such a great staff that you know, Fridays and Saturdays, I'm checking in via phone with our staff, but they got it handled, and they did an incredible job, and we appreciate all the kind comments. We appreciate the coaches, the athletic directors at both sites, Paul Heinrich from Yorktown and Tillman Clark from Delta. Just so much fun. So much fun, and a big, two very deserving champions. The Delta Eagles girls basketball team won the Girls County Championship in Yorktown. I tell you what, really impressive Friday and Saturday, defeating a top three ranked Wapahani team in 2A, handing them their first loss of the season, and then getting a little bit of revenge against the Delta Eagles, their rival in the county championship game. Delta is top three ranked in Class 3A. That's as impressive as you can have it in back-to-back nights in the regular season, and Yorktown got it done. And you just kind of felt like Yorktown throughout the year has been knocking on the door, has had pretty impressive results over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks. There was some issues early on in finishing games. I think they figured that out, I would say, especially winning on Delta's home floor, beating them by double figures, and really in the second half, it didn't really get particularly close. It's really impressive. And so there are three legitimate teams in this area that are going to make sectional championship runs. You know, I think Muncie Central's getting way better as well. They had a really nice result on Friday against Richmond, took them to the brink. Richmond's a top 15-ranked team in the state of Indiana. So I don't want to leave them out by any stretch of the imagination. But those four, man, I tell you what, we've got a very deep group of teams this year, but certainly in the Delaware County tournament, a lot of fun to watch. A lot of fun to watch, and I want to give a big shout out to our staff. So our coverage will continue on Friday as we head to Newcastle, and looking forward to all of that that comes forward. But I wanted to give a big shout out to our staff because they were outstanding this past week. Thank you. And if you want to keep count, I mentioned it on the morning show with Steve Lindell earlier last week. Between our Anderson and Muncie markets, that's 22 games we've had over the last 2 weeks. 22. So that takes a lot. Not just from a play-by-play standpoint and what you hear or watch on the air, but our background staff as well. And we can't thank them enough. Your calls welcome at 765-287-1340. At Mark WMUN on Twitter. When we go to the second segment of the show, when watching the NFL football over the weekend, you know, I imagine you as a Colts fan do this very similarly to how I do it, and I'm watching to say, okay, is there a common theme with these teams? Is there a common theme with these teams in that, you know, what do they have that the Colts don't have, and how do they execute in different ways that the Colts don't execute? And I thought it was incredibly blatant, and it might be a little bit of a replay. I mean, I could probably take the audio from last year at this time and insert it right into the second segment of the show, but we're going to explain it in great detail coming up here in a little bit as well. But I'm going to start here, Ball State men's and women's basketball. Let's start with the women's basketball team. What a win. I mean, an incredible win against Bowling Green, and right now they are at the top of the Mid-American Conference right now due to what they were able to accomplish against Bowling Green, who also came in at 3-0 in conference. And Ball State, just an outstanding win. And you could say over the last week, over the last three games, Ball State won, but maybe didn't play their best basketball. Think about this, folks. Bowling Green was 3-0 coming in Mid-American Conference play. After the first half of play, Ball State was up by 20 after the first half. 20 after the first half. That is making a statement. Because naturally, when you have two teams that through their first three conference games are 3-0, this matchup is always going to be a head-to-head matchup that you judge yourselves on. You're at home. There's a lot of expectations on you, but there is on the opponent as well. And especially since Bowling Green had seen Ball State kind of squeak by Akron, squeak by Buffalo, who on paper it looks like Ball State's a better team than, to come out with that first half and do what they did, pretty darn impressive. And they went by double figures for the majority of the second half. But again, just an excellent and a strong performance by Ball State women's basketball. I think more impressive than that is what they did to limit a Bowling Green offense. Had them shooting under 40%, under 30% from three. So Ball State women's basketball rolling. They are 14-2. And 4-0 in conference play at Central Michigan coming up on Wednesday. That's in the middle of the day. And then a big-time matchup coming up on Saturday. That's when Toledo is at Worthen Arena. And that is one of the matchups that I think everybody wants to see on the women's side of Mid-American Conference basketball. So we'll talk more about that as we go along through the week as well. For Ball State men's basketball, look, another moment down the stretch where they were forced to execute in late game moments. And Toledo was able to execute just a little bit better than Ball State. Ball State fell 77-72. And really, with about 5 minutes to play, it was kind of back and forth. It really was going to be an interesting moments down the stretch. And once again, not that the scripts have been exactly the same, but it's come down to how can you execute late in games. And Toledo was able to do a couple more things than Ball State did. But the fact of the matter is this. They are close. They are very close. And Michael Lewis even said it at the end of the game in post-game conversation, that Toledo right now was the better basketball team, but Ball State is getting there. They are progressing. It is not being shown in the win column right now. Now, I know what the question's going to be, okay? You're 0-4 in conference play. You're 8-8 overall. When's the time that you start to you know, and we talked about it last week with both Mick Tidrow and Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News, pressing the panic button. It is a popular topic of conversation, right? Oh, hey, when's the urgency moment? When's the panic button? And it's thrown around so nonchalantly. And the fact of the matter is, you are four games into conference play. At the same time, you haven't won those games, and this is a win or loss situation. They understand all of those different things, okay? But I will say this, through the first four games of conference play, you have faced Akron, you have faced Kent State, and you have faced Toledo, all three teams who a year ago were your competitors for some of the top spots in the Mid-American Conference. They are, once again, right around there as well. Now, Kent State is 1-3. Their only conference win has come against you. But the two of the teams that are 4-0 in conference, Akron and Toledo, those teams beat you by a combined 9 points in back-to-back games. One at Worthen Arena, one at the on the road. So, again, if we are talking about this in 2 weeks and Ball State is losing these close games again, I don't think you're referencing and saying, hey, they're close, hey, they're progressing. It starts to get to a moment where you say you're starting to fall behind and there may not be a way for you to climb back into it. But as we stand in the current time, there's absolutely a way that they can climb back into it. Okay, four conference games in, we highlighted just how difficult it was. Now, these are the moments. Okay, now, I've described before that Ball State men's basketball's end of the year, when they either go to the conference tournament or maybe or they miss it, is going to be judged by the middle of the conference. I may have to amend that right now and say it a little bit differently. That might mean the same thing. And that is, I believe their way to get into the conference championship tournament is going to be judged by the next couple of weeks. Now, again, they're not going to secure their spot in the next couple of weeks, but they will get themselves back into that, okay? Eastern Michigan is their matchup coming up tomorrow night. Eastern Michigan's 1-3. This one's on the road. Miami of Ohio is a 2-2 basketball team in Mid-American Conference play. Then you have Buffalo, who's 1-3. Then you have Northern Illinois, who is 0-4 with you right now. Then there's Bowling Green, who's 3-1. That's kind of the outlier in this. And then Western Michigan back-to-back. So you can look at the next four games in conference play and feel like, if you bring the efforts and the competitiveness and the confidence and the progression that you have shown through the first four conference games, two of those against arguably the two favorites in conference, Akron and Toledo, who, again, we mentioned you lost to them by a combined 9 points, you could very well find yourselves back in the middle of the conference. This is not to insinuate that Ball State's going to compete for the 1, 2, 3 spot at the top. The top 8 teams make the conference tournament. Okay? Let me remind you, last year, this wasn't really a conversation with Ball State because Ball State was one of the top 4 seeds. They were in the middle for a long time, and then, of course, that big Kent State win at the end of the season. But they were always well within the top 4 seeds in the Mid-American Conference. Did you know that 6-12 Miami made the conference tournament a year ago? They were the 8th seed in the Mid-American Conference. Okay, so they were 6-12. Northern Illinois was 9-9. Buffalo was 9-9, and then Ohio was 10-8. Ohio is the one that knocked out Ball State in the Mid-American Conference tournament in round number 1. I bring up last year because you kind of wonder, hey, okay, so what does it take to really get in? And by no means are you saying you're targeting 6-12 to get into the conference tournament. That's not the point here. The point is this, okay? You aren't to that point where you start to say, oh, are they playing themselves out of the conference tournament? No, not at all. Because, again, what you have coming up is going to put you in that perspective. Now, do you think a 6-12 team in conference is going to be the 8th seed in the Mid-American Conference tournament? I don't think so, but it's happened before. Okay? But the point is, you feel good about where you're at with your team. If you take away record, you feel good about where you are with your team against Akron and Toledo, respectively. The thing is, there's real little rope if you're playing in late-game situations against Eastern Michigan and Miami of Ohio and they look similar to Akron and Toledo. You know, if you can compete with Akron and Toledo, you would think these next couple of weeks that you can navigate this and come out pretty darn well. That's the point. It's not that you should go 4-0, 3-1, okay? 3-1. And look, you're 0-4 in conference with Northern Illinois. I would love to see the other teams in conference and see their conference schedules early on. I would go out on a limb to say I don't think that they resemble the difficulty, especially this last week, that Ball State had to deal with. But put it this way. You're 0-4. Northern Illinois is 0-4. There are 4 teams at 1-3 right above you, folks. There's a long way to go. But the reason I bring this up is to explain, hey, early on, but also how fans are used to what happened last year where Ball State was competing for the top all season long. Look, you're going to be judged by the middle of the conference regardless. So maybe phrasing it in a different way and saying you're going to be judged by the middle of the conference as to how your season goes, maybe it's phrasing it by saying you're judged by how you handle the middle of the conference to compete for a spot in the Mid-American Conference tournament. Okay? You've got a long ways to go. But that's the explanation there. I watched the good majority of that Toledo game, and I thought Ball State at times was the better team there. They absolutely were, and Toledo's one of the top 3 teams in Mid-American Conference play right now. So the point of the matter is, you like the experience you had against Akron and Toledo, and you like the way you played, and also forced those teams to execute at the end of that game to come out with a win themselves. Can you translate that to Eastern Michigan tomorrow? Miami of Ohio on Saturday, at Buffalo next week on Tuesday, and at home against Northern Illinois? At the very least, you know, you should handle the home games because you've been so good at home. Can you take one of those on the road? I mean, again, I'm looking at it that way. They look at it one game at a time. But as you look at the bigger picture over the next couple of weeks, really the rest of January, these next five games, if you loop in Bowling Green at 3-1, yeah, that's going to be a really interesting stretch. And three of those five games are at home to end the month of January. So I thought the steps that were taken, great. You know, you got Trent Middleton Jr. involved. And by the way, it wasn't Bashir Jihad's best game. And you were able to get great play out of Jalen Anderson. Davion Bailey hit some big shots down the stretch and really relied on your backcourt a lot of times. And so you've got some things going. I thought Ben Hendricks played really well, too. You know you're playing with a short bench, but at the same time, if you can compete against the Toledos and Akrons like that and translate that to the middle of the conference schedule, it'll be very interesting to see where this team is in a couple of weeks' time. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. Appreciate that very, very much. We got a lot to get to today. Of course, a lot of football. We'll talk more about Ball State men's and women's basketball as we head throughout the week. But I got to tell you, it is going to be really, really interesting. Really interesting over the next couple of weeks. I'm really, really interested to see how all of this plays out. So, all right. When we come back, we're going to talk about the football games that have happened and one that's probably going to kick off here in the next 8 minutes or so. And yeah, we'll update you on that one if you'd like to get a little bit of an update there. Of course, it's Bills and Steelers from Buffalo, and I'll ask you the question when I come back. How much of a diehard fan are you? Simmer on that, and we'll talk about that when we come back. It's a Reaction Monday on The Power. This is the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Welcome back inside a Monday edition of the program. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us. As always, brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. We are not done with what they're calling Super Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. Bills and Steelers, and then the Eagles and Bucks tonight. Steelers and Bills, I'm mistaken, it's not a kickoff in 4 minutes. It's like 11 minutes because they'll kick off at like 4:37. That's for the TV side of things. 4:37. So that's not too far from now, as that one moved during the snow. Okay, due to snow, that is. How diehard of a fan are you? My wife and I had this conversation actually earlier today about this. So on Saturday night, Kansas City and Miami played. Did they say the wind chills were minus 20? Something along those lines. Okay, so there's one scenario. Okay. The second scenario, if you have social media or have been watching any of the coverage leading up to Bills Steelers that kick off, in, you know, like I said, about 10 minutes from now, and you see the snow-covered seats. Now, it's about 20 degrees, 15, 20 degrees, something along those lines. That's not atypical for Buffalo fans. They're used to the, you know, the factor is, can you sit in your seat and it's snow covered? Because I don't know if you've seen it, they cleared the walkways, but they certainly didn't clear the aisleways and the seats. Man, there's a lot of snow still on the seats. Okay, so that's scenario two. Or scenario three is you don't attend either of those. Now my wife said I wouldn't go to either of them. You know, I think I could take sitting in a seat that's snow covered. I think I can do that. Now, if I was like a season ticket holder or something, I guess so. The minus 20 wind chill, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. I just couldn't do it. Like, you know, we've had the wind chill here over the last couple of days. You know, you've stepped outside a couple of times and maybe said, oh, it's not too bad. Then you hang out there for about 60 seconds longer, and you're probably like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. That place was packed. Kansas City Stadium, Arrowhead, was packed. I mean, that may be a different level of commitment than I'm willing to give to a sport rather than sitting in my house, sipping on some coffee or maybe bourbon, I don't know, and watching the game. Like, maybe whatever you want to do for your team, man, I guess, I mean, go for it. But the snow-covered seat thing with the Bills Steelers, I kind of understand that a little bit more than I would that Kansas City deal. Like, did you see the suites? Because obviously they were trying to get a good shot of Taylor Swift on the broadcast. But the windows were, like, fogged to the point where they really couldn't even see outside through the first quarter, I think it was. Like, even the suites were, like, I mean, I guess you have TVs in there, so you can watch some of the action on the TV until they get the windows all figured out. But, man, some weather for sure, man. I tell you what. But, yeah, that Buffalo game's going to be interesting to watch. Looks like the playing field is not a problem. It's more so the viewing experience for the fans, but I would imagine just I saw a fan jump from a snowbank onto a folding table because that is what the Bills fans do. It's wild, man. Really is. So, 765-287-1340 at Mark WMUN on Twitter. So, here's the deal, and we'll do this throughout the playoffs, right? But I guess Wild Card Weekend is maybe the most relatable for Colts fans or the Colts team and trying to take inventory on what other teams have that they do not. Did it hurt more on Saturday to see the Colts just see the Texans, that is, absolutely roll through the Cleveland Browns? Because I'm convinced, having been at that game, Browns and Colts, that was before Joe Flacco was on the Browns, they were a team that I just did not. I didn't get the hype. You know, their running game was suspect. They don't have a true dynamic playmaker. They have a really good tight end, a really good wide receiver in Amari Cooper that, by the way, a fifth of his production in his 1,000-yard season came in one game. And they have a quarterback who's turned over the football. And then if you looked at the splits for the defense, away versus home, they're two totally different defenses. So maybe Houston benefited. And I think if the Jaguars would have taken care of business last weekend and ended up being the division champion or whatever and had Cleveland come into their house, like, yeah, I don't think it would have been much of a problem. Like, it shocked me that it was a blowout, but it didn't shock me that the Houston Texans were the superior team. Because it comes down to a couple of things. I'm going to get back to that here in a second. I'm sorry, you Cowboys fans. I'm sorry. I am. But I guess the conversation will continue to roll because I just cannot see Jerry Jones staying with Mike McCarthy. Kansas City got the win over Miami. I just think they're a tougher team. And Miami, at the end of the day, I think the biggest downfall for them is the fact that they didn't win that last regular season game. Because had they had a team come to them in Miami, totally different set of circumstances, I really do think that matters for a couple of teams, and Miami being one of those. And then we talked about the Packers, that win. And then last night was the best game of the weekend so far. I guess you can extend it being the weekend to tonight. But what a performance by Detroit and the Rams. I thought that was an incredible game. Really good physical game and two really good quarterbacks. It wasn't that long ago that people were trying to determine whether Matthew Stafford would ever play again. And then he's throwing no-look passes and big games and doing his thing. And Puka Nacua, man, what a find in the fifth round. And that's a dangerous team. The Rams are a dangerous team moving forward. And the Lions certainly have a path to make the NFC Championship game after getting their first win in the playoffs since 1991. By the way, that's the year I was born. Wild. And then we got two more tonight. Okay. So here's the overlying theme, and literally, I could do this, okay? I could take the audio from last year at this time on the Monday after Wild Card Weekend, I get we have two games still left, and literally say the same exact thing. The only difference for the Colts is they didn't know who their coach was. We were talking about the owner being so involved. Could he get out of his own way? All these different things last year at this time. But it came down to this, okay? Because we knew at that time they were going to draft a quarterback. Or they had to. Or they couldn't do the veteran quarterback thing any longer. It came down to this. It wasn't the defenses that won games. It was the offense. It was. You know, the one of the best defenses in the NFL, Dallas, at home, got absolutely drilled. You know, you have Kansas City finding their offense and the toughness that they have with their playmakers, and Patrick Mahomes doing his thing. And then in game number one, again, the better defense in that game statistically, the Cleveland Browns, got run over. Absolutely run over. Now, I'm not saying that the defenses didn't step up in moments. Yeah, absolutely. But it was more about the offenses, more about the quarterbacks every step of the way so far through the wild card. And I would expect tonight, I would expect in this game with the Bills and Steelers being the same exact thing, I would expect it in Eagles and Buccaneers maybe to be the only game that might be different. Because those are two offenses that are very streaky. But at the end of the day, there's always an exception to the rule. It's not a hard set of circumstances, but it comes down to this, man. You have got to have playmakers. And you have to have a lot of them. And you have to have them in different areas of versatility. Okay? Houston overwhelmed Cleveland with not just their scheme, but their playmakers. At quarterback, C.J. Stroud. Their running back, Devin Singletary, was big. One big wide receiver, Nico Collins. And the tight end, Dalton Schultz, has been huge. I'm going to get back to that here in just a second. Then you move on, and you go to Kansas City. There has been a lot of talk about Kansas City and what they don't have. But at the end of the day, guess what? They have a quarterback. They have a running back in Pacheco who had a nice night. They have Rashee Rice, who is a rookie, not playing like a rookie anymore. He is a go-to dude, and Travis Kelce may not be Travis Kelce of 2-3 years ago, but he's still pretty darn good. Okay, so you got threes there. Let's move on to the Packers, okay? The Packers are different in the way that they put things together. However, they've got a stud running back in Aaron Jones. They have a quarterback in Jordan Love. And they have three, four wide receivers. They have two tight ends, Musgrave and Kraft. I mean, everybody's kind of equal in that offense. And they can all go for big games. Dubs had it last night. I had Jaden Reed in my fantasy football league this year. He's a stud. Christian Watson was the revelation at the second half of last year. He got injured at the end of the year, really wasn't even a factor. And he was kind of seen as the number one option going in. I'm getting to my point here, folks. I'm not just talking about the other teams, I promise you. So then you go to last night in really Detroit, and the Rams are very similar. Detroit's got two running backs, Gibbs and Montgomery. They've got a tight end in Laporta. They've got a wide receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown. Okay? Then you go to the Rams. They got a quarterback. They got a running back. They have a tight end, and they have Puka Nacua, and then Cooper Kupp is still pretty darn good as a possession wide receiver. The point is you got to have it in multiples. You do. The Colts don't know about their quarterback yet. That's the biggest question mark. You feel a level of confidence towards Anthony Richardson, okay? You've got the running back at Jonathan Taylor. That's nice. Michael Pittman Jr., is he back? That's a great question. So you've got that. Where's the second playmaker on the offense other than the running back and the one wide receiver? Because at the end of the season, not a disrespect, your three tight ends were Will Mallory, Mo Alie-Cox, and Kylan Granson. Your second wide receiver is Josh Downs. Now, I like Josh Downs just like you do. I do, as a complimentary piece. You put him on any other team, he's a third, fourth wide receiver on those teams. okay? He is a nice piece as a slot wide receiver. He's the Tutu Atwell of the L.A. Rams last night. Tutu Atwell got a nice crossing round, caught it, took it away from a defender, and scored. That was his only play of the game. That's how I see Josh Downs, a good player, really solid player. You got to have players like him on your team. But as far as a guy that you can dynamically change the pace of the game and make things happen and be a guy in volume that you can scheme up different sets specifically for him, that's not Josh Downs. That's not Alec Pierce. That's not Isaiah McKenzie. You have to have a second guy that scares the defense. Now, if it's not going to be at tight end, okay, and I know Jelani Woods didn't play all this year. Maybe it's him. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I was marveled at the multiple options. You know, you could argue, other than drafting C.J. Stroud, the best thing the Houston Texans did on the offensive side of the football was sign Dalton Schultz at tight end. How many safety nets does this Colts offense have? And again, Dalton Schultz is not a dude that is, a breakaway guy, but he'll catch 6-7 balls for you across the middle. At this point of his career, you know who that is as well for Kansas City? That's Travis Kelce. Look, I'm not asking for Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, okay? That's luxury. I'm not asking for Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. It's not what I'm asking for. When you needed moments for the Colts offense, you turn to Michael Pittman Jr. What happens if he's covered? Do you have somebody across the middle that can catch 5 to 6 to 7 balls for you? The Kansas City offense has that. Okay? The Houston Texans offense has that. Okay? You know, really the Detroit Lions have that in Sam Laporta. While he's more dynamic at this point of his career as a rookie, in volume, he's a 5-6-7 catch guy. You know, and then they've got Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's great. The L.A. Rams outside of Puka Nacua have Tyler Higbee in the middle of the four. I mean, that's the point. Okay, you got to do it in multiple ways. I thought the keys to the game for the Packers against the Cowboys, they own the middle of the field. And you know why they own the middle of the field? Because they were running crossing routes in the slot for Romeo Dubs. I mean, it was brilliant. You know, those four wide receivers in general, there's not one dude that you're like, oh, man, that's Justin Jefferson, that's Ja'Marr Chase. They were smart in the way they did it, and they own the middle of the field. The Colts can really learn something from that. They absolutely can. And that was the overwhelming theme from this weekend for me. It's not just, oh my gosh, they got to go get Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Wow, they got to go get Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. They got to go get Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. No, that's not the point. The point is, who's your third guy? Because on all these offenses, they're all different. But really, the formula that works is the, hey, running back, one really good wide receiver, the others can contribute, but then have somebody that can work the middle of the field, whether that be a tight end, whether that be a true number two wide receiver. And I hope the stubbornness of this organization and what they've done with playmakers in the past, they can understand that. Houston beat the Colts largely because of Devin Singletary at running back, Nico Collins at wide receiver, and Dalton Schultz at tight end, and they did it again against the Cleveland Browns and dropped 45 on them. Now, two of those were pick sixes, so take that away. They still would have won 28-14, and that's how they won. With one wide receiver, no other receiver on the team had more than one catch in that football game. And guess what? The Packers' spread looked almost the same. It's the formula that wins. And can the Colts do that? We'll talk more about that coming up, but I think it is very interesting and translatable. It's not too much to ask, and also, the Colts can do it this offseason. We'll talk about that coming back. Power Talk on CWMUN on this Monday. Welcome back. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you by Sheriff Castle Roofing. Your roof is there to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Castle Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. How convenient that we were talking about the formula in today's NFL to win. Guess what Buffalo just did? They have a quarterback in Josh Allen, was 5 for 5, 56 yards and a touchdown in drive number one. James Cook, their lead back, 4 rushes, 23 yards. They have a wide receiver in Stephon Diggs, who had a couple of grabs for 22 yards. And they have a tight end in Dalton Kincaid, who had a reception for 20 to get their first score of the game. Folks, the top teams in the league have this. The top teams in the league have this. The Colts need to follow suit. And oh, by the way, they have $72 million in cap space to get this done. They do. Get somebody else. And, you know, what I'm more convinced of now than ever, and it should make you feel better about the way the Colts looked against the Houston Texans, but, man, was there just some bad secondary play or what this past weekend? Like, did you truly come away from any one of those games over this weekend and said, wow, that secondary won them that football game. Wow, that secondary is owning them. I mean, the only exception might have been the Packers. Might have been the Packers. And how quickly they got out to that lead. Cleveland, you know, Joe Flacco on the second throw, that was just a bad throw. The other one was off his back foot, kind of lobbed it up. It wasn't exactly like the secondary took over. But there was not one team this weekend that I'm like, wow, you know what? Their secondary looks pretty darn good. They're winning that football game. No. Nobody's secondary is really good, actually. It all comes down to what you do on first and stop the run. Can you get one stop? Maybe a penalty. Maybe a loss of one or two. Make it third and 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's what it comes down to. And then it forces a quarterback to have to force a throw, or you get a little bit of pressure and flush him out of the. I mean, that was this weekend. There wasn't a dominant pass rush. There wasn't a dominant secondary. I mean, the way playoff football looks compared to the regular season, it actually does look pretty different, if you want to know the truth. So go get another playmaker, please. Tight end, wide receiver, doesn't matter. Go get one, and go get a proven one, because I'll tell you, every team in the playoffs has it. I mean, look at Tampa Bay and the Eagles. I mean, Tampa Bay is like the one they're like, wow, they made the playoffs. Well, their quarterback, Baker Mayfield, has been a top seven dude all year long from a numbers standpoint. Their running back, Rashad White, sneaky great numbers. Mike Evans has had a Pro Bowl year. Chris Godwin's pretty darn good. You got two guys at wide receiver there. Eagles, now A.J. Brown won't play, but Devontae Smith's really good. Dallas Goedert is one of the better tight ends. Jalen Hurts, they paid him like a, you know, $250 million franchise quarterback. And DeAndre Swift or Kenneth Gainwell, take your pick. They got a couple of running backs there. Every team's got it, man. Every team has it. Colts need to just look at this, man. I'm telling you. Don't add a cornerback. Add a wide receiver. Add a tight end. Go do it. All right. We will step aside, come back one final time on this Monday after this. One final time on the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Bills 7-0 over the Steelers, and they have the football back. Not saying it's over yet, but oh boy, could you imagine if the Bills went back-to-back touchdowns and Steelers went back-to-back three and outs? We might have ourselves a long, long game. Whew. Better than no football, I guess, right? Better than that. So lots of coverage this week. Ball State men's basketball back in action tomorrow against Eastern Michigan, searching for win number one in conference. But there's some optimism, and maybe tomorrow's the day against a team that, again, nice to get win number one in conference play. A very important couple of weeks for Ball State men's basketball. Women's basketball next in action on Wednesday. We'll be talking a lot about those two teams this week. A little bit about the Colts, a little bit about the Pacers. And we're going to have ourselves a week, some football as well, for sure. So hope you enjoyed the show today. We're back with you tomorrow, better than ever. 4 o'clock right here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Have a good rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.